Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, broadcasting from Seattle, Washington with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Again, we have on our podcast today Dr. Michael Egnor, professor of neurosurgery and pediatrics at State University of New York, Stony Brook, who is also an award-winning brain surgeon that has been named one of New York's best doctors by New York Magazine. So we actually recently had Dr. Egnor on a podcast talking about his journey to becoming a full-blown conscious Darwin skeptic. We learned how he was sort of started off as a subconscious or unrecognized Darwin skeptic, and after reading some of the works of leading ID proponents, he realized that these were some doubts that were troubling him in his mind for quite some time. And what I'd like to talk to Dr. Egnor about today, who we have back on the show, is about the medical field in general and his experience and how it relates to Darwinism. Is evolution and neo-Darwinian theory a big component of the way doctors think and the way that they practice medicine, and does it play a large role in medicine today or perhaps in the past? So, Dr. Egnor, it's wonderful to have you back on the podcast again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Casey.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you last time. We learned about some of the reasons that you are a scientific skeptic of evolution. After all, you're only a professor of neurosurgery. So, you know, what do you know about this subject?
Right.
But I'd like to know some more about, you know, I think that maybe some of our Darwinist friends, they, you know, if you don't have a PhD in evolutionary biology, they complain that you aren't qualified to talk about the subject. Even if you do have a PhD, sometimes they will complain if you don't have the right views. But in this case, you are clearly an outstanding representative of the medical field, and you are fully qualified. There's no one can dispute that you are more than able to talk about, you know, how does the medical field interact with neo-Darwinian theory? And I'd like to really find out from you, does neo-Darwinism play a large role? By the way, I dispute anyone who says that you are not qualified to talk about evolution, but I think that no one would argue that you are qualified to talk about the medical field. So, talk to me about the medical field, and does it rely upon neo-Darwinism in, you know, in everyday practice of medicine?
It doesn't rely at all on neo-Darwinism, either in the everyday practice of modern medicine or even in research in modern medicine. It used to rely a lot on Darwinism. Back in the early 20th century, when eugenics was a very important part of the practice of medicine in this country and in many other countries, eugenics was essentially the application of Darwinian ideas about breeding animals to human beings. And almost immediately, with the publication of Origin of Species, many of Darwin's colleagues, including his cousin Francis Galton, began applying Darwin's ideas to people. Darwin himself applied these ideas in The Descent of Man, which he published subsequent to Origin of Species. And eugenics was basically the concept that human beings could be bred as one would breed animals, and that there was something morally right about survival of the fittest. It had actually extended Darwin's ideas into the moral realm. Of course, all ideas, as shattering as Darwin's ideas were, ultimately get extended to some extent into morality and politics. And eugenics was central to American medicine. 60,000 people were sterilized against their will in the early 20th century.
Wow.
Because they were deemed by Darwinian eugenicists to be unfit, to be unworthy to have their kind propagated into the future. So medicine has had a large dose of Darwinism in the early 20th century.
Wow.
There has been, however, no contribution by Darwinism to the practice of medicine aside from eugenics. Neither has there been a contribution by Darwinism to medical research.
Now, come now, Dr. Egnor. I mean, we hear from Darwinists all the time that antibiotic resistance is basically the result of drugs causing a selection pressure upon a population of bacteria, forcing certain ones to survive, and if you have a lucky mutation, then you're able to, you know, outwit the antibiotic drug that's being sent to kill you, and your kind propagates more. Is that not a huge contribution that Darwinism has made to modern medicine?
Well, it's a pretty funny claim on the part of Darwinists. It's sort of like Al Gore claiming that he invented the internet and that he was the basis for Love Story. I mean, people who are infatuated with their ideas can claim credit for everything. the reality is that bacteria are killed or not killed by antibiotics because of reasons that have been uncovered by molecular biology, by pharmacology, by all sorts of very important parts of medicine. We don't need the Darwinists to tell us that bacteria that are killed by antibiotics don't survive, and bacteria that aren't killed by antibiotics do survive. We don't need to read Origin of Species to understand this. Perhaps a Darwinist physician does, but other physicians don't. The idea that Darwinists could take credit for the simple observation that bacteria that aren't sensitive to antibiotics aren't sensitive to antibiotics is astonishing. It's a ridiculous notion. Darwinism means nothing in our understanding of that.
So it contributes very little to that whole question of how are we going to prevent antibiotics from creating superbugs? I mean, do you
it contributes nothing to it. It's not very little.
Okay.
The point is that if you have an antibiotic that doesn't work on a bacterium, it won't work. Darwinism doesn't really help you. Molecular
sure.
biology helps you with that, and pharmacology helps you with that. Bacteriology
sure.
helps you with that. Darwinism is basically just a tautology, and it's completely meaningless in reference to bacterial resistance.
Okay, so that is very interesting. But you are a professor of medicine. You don't just practice medicine. You're also a professor. Do your colleagues, do they at least add on Darwinism as I believe it was Phil Skell who called it a narrative gloss? Do they at least add it on to their discussions to help students to understand maybe some kind of a bigger picture of life's relationships? Is it something that's really talked about very much in medical school among medical doctors and professors of medicine and among medical students? Is this something that is at least, you know, talked about a little bit here and there? Is it something that plays any kind of a role in how people learn medicine?
No. There are no courses in Darwinism in medical schools. Medical schools don't teach it. There aren't even any requirements that I know of in medical schools for pre-medical education in Darwinism. They require courses in biology. But there's no specific requirement that a student have any familiarity with Darwinism. And, of course, that is in itself kind of an experiment of nature, meaning that regardless of what the Darwinists say, if medicine is practiced for a century at a very high level without any particular need for Darwinism to help students understand the science of medicine, well, that's pretty good evidence that it's not relevant to the practice of medicine. There's no correlation between Darwinism and the practice of medicine in medical school or thereafter.
And when you are cutting someone's brain open and doing surgery on them, are you thinking about the forces of natural selection and how they may have wired the brain to do certain functions or cause certain behaviors? Or are you thinking about the more practical questions of how does the brain work and how am I going to fix it? What is going through your mind when you are performing brain surgery on someone? This is an interesting question. I've never asked a brain surgeon what they're thinking when they're performing brain surgery. So I'd really like to know this for a number of different reasons.
Well,
what are you thinking about?
Darwinism is in my view a significant impediment to intelligently performing surgery or intelligently practicing medicine, because again the Darwinian hypothesis is that the human being that we're working on and their biology is the result of random events. These are accidents that happen to have been retained by natural selection. The intelligent practice of surgery and the thoughtful practice of medicine is to look for patterns, to look for things that are not chance and not random, so that the assumption of design, the assumption that there's a reason for the disease you're treating and you're trying to unravel that reason and trying to correct it, means explicitly that you ought to keep Darwinism out of your thoughts. It doesn't help you, it hurts you. The design inference is of great value in medicine. It actually has been an enormous help in scientific research in general, in medical research. You're a much better doctor and a much better surgeon if you assume that the organ you're working on was designed. You can understand it better.
Wow. Well, I think that is very profound and really quite incredible to hear. It's not every day that I get to interview a professor of neurosurgery on this podcast, and it's really fascinating to hear about your experiences both as a doctor and a professor of medicine. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Agnor. This has been really enlightening, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Casey. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, again, we have Dr. Michael Agnor, professor of neurosurgery and pediatrics at State University of New York, Stony Brook. If you ever need some surgery done on your brain, I recommend looking him up and giving him a call. He obviously assumes that the brain is intelligently designed, and if you agree that your brain has a good has a design to it, then perhaps this is the kind of doctor you'll want to go to if you need some help. How's that for a plug? Not that you probably need it. In any case, this is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast, and we'll have Dr. Agnor again on the show in the near future, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.